Hello and welcome back to the Legal Queen podcast. I release these episodes each Sunday morning at 6 a.m. We have 11,000 monthly listeners, so I hope that you enjoy as we try to help those that have a family law question or query by giving as much information as we possibly can. So if I could ask that if you enjoy this podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating so that we can help even more people. My goal is to reach a total of 50,000 monthly listeners by the end of the year, and you guys can help me do that. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. I hope you enjoy. Hey, Captain. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good to be back.
Yes. A couple of questions. I'm not sure whether these were asked on the last one because I wasn't available.
Okay.
But I've been separated now for over 11 years. How do I go about getting a divorce if I don't know where my ex-husband is and I've tried every way possible to finding him?
Okay, you're going to have to exhaust everything. So when she says she's tried every way possible, that's great. Make sure that you're making notes of everything that you try and get evidence of that. You also want to get in touch with an inquiry agent and see if they can find out where he is, because they have some methods of finding people. You also want to exhaust social media and make a note of how you've done that. Last Chance Saloon, you would then make an application to the court for what's called a disclosure order. But that's where you have to give chapter and verse of how you have tried to find their contact details. And if the court's satisfied that you've exhausted that, then they will obtain the address, and they'll do that by contacting the DWP. They won't give you the address, but they will be able to serve your divorce petition for you, which is ultimately what you want to do.
Yeah, that's great. And then I've got another question that says, hi, I had a contact order put in place for me and my ex, and our daughter's got supervised contact for 5 hours on a Saturday. Due to DV and excessive drinking and drugs, he was sent to prison for pouring petrol over his girlfriend and hasn't had any contact for nearly a year. I'm worried about our daughter's safety when he gets released. Can I apply to stop the contact order, or what do I do?
If the child is in immediate danger, or is going to be upon his release, then you don't have to apply to stop. You would simply stop. Because the practicalities are, if you make the application to the court, you're not going to get heard for about 3 months. So you can exercise your parental responsibility and simply stop contact. So for those of you that have a contact order, don't think that you can't just do it. The court's not going to have any consequences for you. They might ask you why you stopped contact and breach the order. But if you've got good reason, the court's going to be fine with that.
And then is it then up for the other parent to take you back to court if you stop contact?
I mean, if you can't resolve it between yourself and, you know, for whatever reason, mediation might not be appropriate if we've got domestic violence, then yes. The only way then is for the other side to make a contact application to the court.
Okay. That's all I've got for now, Trace.
Brill. Thanks, Captain. Right. I'm going to invite Mun up to the stage. You have your hand up. And after Mun, we have Stacey. So I'm going to invite you both, actually, and we'll see who gets up to the stage first. Sometimes it can take a little while. Mun, you are up first, so what's your question?
Hi, Tracy. Hello. Hope you're well.
I'm good, thanks.
My question is on behalf of somebody else. If false allegations are made and they're proven to be false, can there be any legal repercussions for making the false allegations and for lying, or is there nothing you can do about that? You just have to suck
it
up?
are you talking about children's applications first of all?
Okay, so
typically what will happen is if one parent's making allegations about the other, then the court may well order a fact-find hearing, and then the court will determine in that fact-find hearing if they're true or false. And if the court find that actually there's not enough evidence to support them and therefore they won't be relied upon, because the court won't use the wording they're not real, the court will simply say that the person who's made the allegations hasn't made them successfully. So if the court makes a finding that we're not going to rely on the allegations, there wasn't enough evidence to support them, Then no, there won't be any consequences in that situation. The children's application will just continue as if the allegations hadn't been made.
But is there no chance of making up the contact that's been lost while they've been investigating?
That will depend on if that's in the best interest of the child. So, effectively, a fact find pushes the pause button on the application. So we wouldn't see it as lost time. We would see it as time that was needed in order to investigate the allegations. But it depends what you're asking for, man. So if all you were asking for was alternate weekends anyway, then the court may be minded to like start those up straight away. It depends. It does depend on your case.
Right, okay, got it.
All right.
Thank you for your help.
Pleasure. Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye.
Right, Stacey, you are next up. What's your question?
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
We have actually spoken before. It's basically to do with family court proceedings. I've actually gone through this for 4 years and more. And I'm currently trying to overturn a special guardianship order. But the predicament I'm in is because they want to see, obviously, a good enough change to say to allow to have the children back home. But mine wasn't a case of I didn't really need to change. So I was accused of having a mental health condition that puts me in a position where I'm a risk to my children. Basically, it's defamation of character because I don't even act anything like they're accusing me of. I've tried to go around the mental health teams for 4 years. I've only just got through to actually being able to see a counsellor who is willing to work with me, but that's only through being put on a probation because I basically had a gagging order on me by my ex-partner. But obviously, through the distress of having the children away from me, I haven't shut up and I've spoke about it on social media. So that's the only reason I've got the mental health help. So what can I do if this gets put in? Obviously, it's going to be sent to the court, sent to the judge, showing that I've done this sort of therapy. Hopefully there's going to be an outcome of what's going to happen next. So obviously, I haven't got this condition that this woman is describing me to have. How do I argue that in court, though? Because if they still turn around and say, oh, you are not doing the right treatment that we've said to do, so and so, but the other mental health teams are telling me different. What do I do? Because surely it's an illegal matter that you're saying that I'm this, that and the other when I'm not, and now I can't have my family home for that.
So I think what you've got to remember is if a special guardianship order has been made, then social services have proved their case to the court, okay? Through whatever means, and I don't know your case, obviously, but they have proved
that. Yeah, you don't want to go into it because...
Yeah, no, that's fine. I wouldn't want you to. But the reason I raise that is because that's your starting point, okay? Regardless of who you are speaking to within your mental health team, you have got to get social services on side. If your starting point is fighting with them because you can't agree with what they're saying, then you're not going to succeed. And I know
it's not so much about agreeing though, but if I've got mental health teams and my doctors giving a different opinion on some private one that was done in London 4 years ago, how am I supposed to argue it?
Because social services are saying that you have the mental health issues. So what you need to do is go back to them and say, well, here's the evidence that says that I don't. What else would you like me to produce to satisfy you that I'm not a concern?
I did give that to social services already 4 years ago and they've, it went through and just got passed regardless. So.
If you ask the question though, Stacey, it has to be answered. That's what I'm saying. Okay, if you ask the question, because what you're saying to me is, I've done everything that I can. I've provided all the evidence and they still say that I'm not worthy. So then you have to ask them the question, okay, what more information can I give you? And if you're asking that question in front of the judge is going to help. Family court's going to say to social services, what else is it? Now, if they say, we don't like her attitude, we don't like the fact that she's all over social media about this, we still think that she's quite mentally unstable, you still ask the question, okay, what would you recommend that I do? The main point that I'm trying to get across is you've got to be with them, not against them. And that can sometimes be the hardest part. Learn to work with them, even though you might not agree. If you keep asking the question and saying, what is it that you want me to do better? What is it that you want me to do more of? Then you can start to do it. Rather than saying, I haven't got any issues. Here's medical evidence. Accept that and let's move on. Because that's what they're hearing. I'm not saying that's what you're saying, but that's potentially what they're hearing. You've got to just work with them.
So if I give in what evidence I've got to the judge and they say, oh, like, this isn't good enough.
Yep.
What do I say to my solicitor? Well, have social services involved with this person then, and then you,
no.
you know, you say
no, no,
what?
You
don't understand how I'm supposed to get around
okay.
it.
Okay, well, I didn't realise, Stacey, that you had a solicitor. So the first thing I'm going to say is go back and ask them, because they should be giving you the advice and not me. But that's not what I'm saying. You say to social services, if that evidence that I've already supplied to you doesn't tick your boxes, please tell me the evidence that would. Not you get involved with them then, because that's what you're saying, social services. Well, you get involved with our mental health team then. No, no, work with them. What is it that I can give
what I'm
you?
What I'm saying is I don't have social services back involved with me. It's basically just a court's decision.
Well, then ask the court.
What evidence.
So ask the court then.
Well, ask them to have them involved. Ask them to do it then.
No, ask the court what it is that they want.
I mean, I think you'd be quite thrown aback from it all if you had a look at all my stuff that actually has gone on, because it is wrong, and, you know, I have tried, and, you know, it's... Yeah, but, right, okay.
Okay. All right, Stacey. I don't think I can take it any further. I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Right. All the best. Yeah. Bye. Captain, you had your mic off. Sorry, there was a bit of background noise, so I put you on mute. How is it I can help?
That's okay. So this is for Middleman, who yeah. is in the audience or is on TikTok, one of the two.
Yeah.
I'm the respondent in a divorce with my ex.
Yeah.
I understand that general legal advice is not to apply for the final order until a financial order is in place. However, in my case, my pension is increasing every month with my contributions. And although my ex works, she does not pay into her pension, so I want to end the marriage ASAP. I recently mentioned to my ex that I'm going to apply for the final order now, as the time has elapsed, and I'm able to do so. And her solicitor has contacted me to say that if I do apply, they will contest it. My question is, can the final order be contested? And if so, under what grounds?
So, yes, an application can be made by the other side asking the court not to make the final order because they haven't sorted out the finances. And typically, the court will place a bar on the final order being made until the finances are sorted out. However, I get this a lot, where the other side are deliberately dragging their feet and not wanting to get involved. And what I would say to the person who's looking to get the final order in divorce, set a deadline. Right, well, if we haven't remedied this in 4 weeks, or we haven't entered negotiations in 4 weeks, or you haven't given me the answer to my question in 4 weeks, I'm making a court application. Because by making the court application, you then set a finish line in the sand for the finances. But that's going a little bit further than what the question was actually asking. But yeah, they can make an application and they will most likely succeed.
Yeah, because it happens a lot, doesn't it, where parties drag their heels on
yeah.
finance for, say, more pension contributions.
Yeah, and we get all sorts of wonderful excuses. You know, I can't afford a solicitor, I'm not ready, it's the summer holidays and the kids are off, can you give me till September? Oh, it's Christmas is coming up, can we sort this out in the new year? You know, you have to be respectful of both parties. If somebody's determined to move on with the divorce and the finances and the other person's dragging their feet, you kind of have to try and meet in the middle. And sometimes a court application will do that. Not that I advocate just running off to court at every opportunity, But it, you know, if it's the only way to get a resolve, then you have to do it.
Great. That's all I've got for now, Tracy.
Real. Okay, thanks, Captain. Andrea, hello.
Hello.
You're back on the Discord. You can hear me okay then. Excellent.
I can, yes. Yes, I thought I'd just let you know I can hear you.
Oh, but fabulous.
Also, I did exactly as Missy said.
Yes.
I deleted the app and then reinstalled it, and it's been working fine ever since,
which is brilliant.
But I thought, while you've got no hands up, I've got a question. So I was reading something in between you last being on and today in regards to the law change, well, the process of family court changing in regards to when you make an application, the courts are going to look to you first to prove that you have done everything you can to resolve the matter outside of court before you take it to court. Is that correct, or have I misunderstood that?
It is correct. So at the moment, there is an overwhelming number of applications being made to the court. And solution number one was to encourage parties to at least attempt mediation before making the application. This came out a few years ago. And the court's thought process was that, let's say 10 couples try mediation. If only one of them succeed, it's one less application to the court, okay? Now, that does help. Mediation isn't compulsory, so the parties have got to want to do it, but it certainly helps. The next thing that the court then started to do was a little bit of gatekeeping. So before, if the parties had attempted mediation and it didn't work or it didn't succeed and we made the application, court would automatically list it for a hearing date. That's not happening so much now. It's going across to the legal advisor to actually read the application to see what the problem is. A little bit of gatekeeping's going on. And then we might get a letter to the solicitors to say, okay, what's the real issue here? Do we really need this to be dealt with by way of a court hearing? Or perhaps we could just get them to do some parenting classes and then see if the problem still exists. Now the latest sort of solution, if you like, and it's not because the court don't want to see people, it's simply because we're at breaking point in the family system, is to throw it back and say to the person, look, you know, obviously we'll help, but please see the court as a last resort and explain to us exactly what you've done to try to remedy. Because what the court's now thinking is that if the person who's made the application says, well, nothing, then they'll go back with a list of, you know, mediation, seek some legal advice, try to talk to the person, you know, do a parenting class, whatever it might be, whatever their issue is.
Yeah, I just think that if with that being correct, that's so fantastic for people that have got a past like myself, because it's going to be a massive deterrent, because my ex wouldn't engage. He wouldn't have a conversation about the problems. He wouldn't go to mediation. He didn't take legal advice the whole way through.
Yeah.
I just think that's really encouraging that the court have taken that step. So I was quite excited about it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Andrea. For people in your situation, it will be an absolute blessing. And with everything, where we fix one problem, we at times create another. So where it's not going to work is where you've got people who need an emergency application, people who are in the midst of domestic violence or fearful and desperately need. You know, when I first started this game, if we had an emergency application, we could make the application and be heard the same day, literally the same day. Now, an emergency application can still take weeks. Gosh. I mean, it's just that's how under pressure the family court system is at the moment.
That's crazy, isn't it? But hopefully this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Hopefully that we, you know, if we can sweep some out that don't really need to be there. It's a bit like the issue we have with the GPs, you know. There's people taking up GPs' time when actually they've just got a cough or a cold, and people that really need to see the doctor and actually can't get in to see them. It's much the same with the court. There's people that really need judges' time. Sometimes the solicitors need judges' time. You know, we need an order making very quickly, or we need an order correcting very quickly. And even we can't get in before the judges without the client. So hopefully it will go some way to helping. The real solution would be, and I'm saying this because you never know who's listening, the real solution is that we need more government funding. More government funding to really assist our courts would help. But I guarantee Mr. Sunak is otherwise occupied, shall we say.
Absolutely, yeah. And another thing that is a definitely a downfall is there's an awful lot of like family law advice pages on Facebook and places like that.
Yeah.
But they seem to be run by Mackenzie friends, and no disrespect, but their answer to everything is, well, you need to take it back to court then. You need to take it back to court. And that isn't always the answer.
Yeah. You've got to be so careful as well about people that hold themselves out as being able to give advice if they're not actually qualified, because they may give out the wrong advice and send you down the wrong path.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I've seen lots of very bad advice on certain pages.
Yeah.
And lots of take it back to court. And I'm like, how ridiculous.
I know.
You don't need to go back to court for that.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I will let you go because I've taken up enough of your time. Oh, thank you very, very
much. Thanks, Andrea. Good to hear you.
Bless you. Take care. Bye. And you. Bye for now. Bye.
Quick question that was on the TikTok. Somebody said, could I explain a Section 7? Absolutely, happy to. So Section 7 is a report that the court order CAFCAS to do, and it will identify the wishes and feelings of the children, and it will be fed back to the judge to help the judge make a decision with regard to the contact application that has been given to the judge. Okay, Captain, you're back on. How can I help?
My ex-husband and I have agreed a financial settlement and stay the financial remedy order, and D81s have been submitted to the court. Do you know roughly how long it's likely for the judge to agree to the order? Thank you.
Typically, if it's uploaded on the portal, and I'm sure it was, we're looking at a couple of weeks. You know, the agreed orders and D81s aren't taking that long. And then when we have that back and we can then apply for our final order, at times that's taking days. So it shouldn't be too much longer now.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Captain. For those of you that might not be aware, I have lots of friends and moderators that help me run the TikTok when I come on live, but also the Discord channel. And Captain is one of those people. So there is lots of people that maybe can't get onto Discord for a start, or maybe they are on Discord but know that their ex is listening, so don't want their voice to be recognised, or sometimes people are just too shy, which is fine. They know it's being recorded and put out on the podcast. So Captain and my other moderator, Mart, who isn't with us this evening, will ask questions on behalf of other people. And those questions can come from people just putting a question on the Discord channel, or sometimes even on the TikTok. Sometimes if people are already in the lounge in Discord, they will message Captain or Mart, and they'll ask a question on their behalf. So if you wondered what was going on. Then on the TikTok, we have Zoe, who is always here to help me out, and Missy. And then we have Karen and Anne. And Karen will help us with passport questions, but she texted me earlier to say she might not be able. Hi, Zoe. She might not be able to make it this evening. And I think I did see Anne. Oh, Karen, you are here. Sorry. Karen is here. So if anyone's got a passport question on TikTok, start your question with HMPO and Karen will help you out. And if anyone's got a CMS question, then start your question with CMS and Anne will help you out. Right, would family court go ahead if there's a serious police investigation? Depends what that is, Sian. Just a quick question from the TikTok here. Sometimes in family court, we'll pause the family proceedings until the criminal investigation has been dealt with. But it depends what the criminal charges are, okay? So it's not always paused. As a rule of thumb, if the criminal charges slash investigation would have a direct impact on the children, so let's say it's a violence or it's a sexual offence or something like that, chances are the family court's going to pause it. But if it was a fraud investigation, something like along those lines, maybe not. Maybe we just crack on. What is a Section 37 in Children's Services, please? It's very similar to a Section 7 that CAFCAS do, but a Section 37 is what Social Services will do. Very, very detailed report going into the whole history of the family, who everybody is, who the children live, how the application came to be made, and what social services consider to be in the best interest of the children. So it's another report that helps the court identify what's going to be in the best interest of the children. Had a question there. Would a Section 7 involve background checks of parents and their families? Not necessarily the families, but definitely the parents. Now, when an application is made, CAFCAS will do a safeguarding report or letter, and that's where they'll do some background checks on mum and dad or whoever's made the application, looking specifically at any police involvement or social service involvement. Are the family already known to social services? And that safeguarding check is then reported back to the judge. Kezi, what's your question?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm just trying to figure all this out. I don't know where to start, really. I'll try and make it as concise as I can.
Okay.
So I left my quite abusive husband over 3 years ago. And we owned a house together, which I left because he refused to leave and to basically obviously escape the abusive relationship. We have two children together. I moved back with my parents, and then since then I've managed to find housing with the local housing association. All while that's going on, he's met a new partner and has lived with her for about 2 years. Meanwhile, the house is sat empty. He pays the mortgage on it, but he's refused up until now to sell the house or buy me out. So it's been kind of stagnant for a while. We're kind of now at the stage where he says he's going to sell the house. I don't know really what my question is. I think I'm a bit frightened for the future because I filed for divorce, which he won't respond to. I've spent all my money on legal fees up until now and I haven't got anywhere. And I'm kind of scared that if we sell the house and I get any money from the house, that I'll lose my housing, but I won't have enough money to buy a house out of the divorce. And I don't know if I need to, we've tried mediation, he won't respond with mediation. And now I'm kind of stuck. I don't know where my next steps are, what you would kind of advise me to do.
Okay, so in the money that you've spent already, Kezi, on legal advice or legal help, at any time mm-hmm. did you get advice about what you're financially entitled to? Do you know what your legal position is there?
No, I don't know.
So a lot of times, that's what I will say to people, just pay for the hour to get that. Find the money from somewhere, because once you know what you're legally entitled to and you've got a rough idea that you're going to get, 70% of the house, a pension share and possible spousal maintenance, if money from that point is tight, you can do it yourself. But at the moment, you don't know what the destination is. Do you know what I mean? So you've got in behind the wheel of the car, but you don't really know where you're going. So as much as you say you've spent all that money on legal fees at the moment, if you haven't got the advice, you're going to have to get that 1 hour advice. Find out exactly what it is that you're entitled to, and then you can go after that yourself. You don't necessarily need a solicitor then to help you with that. Now, during that 1 hour advice, you're then going to be able to share with the solicitor, okay, well, I'm in receipt of benefits, so any lump sums are going to scupper that, unless I can get enough of a lump sum to purchase a property outright, for example, and you can go through that with them. It doesn't take long, based on what a client tells us, to give them a rough idea. We're not telling them 100% accuracy, but based on the information that we're given, we can give you a very, good idea of what it is that you're likely to come away with. And then once you know that, you can then start to navigate it yourself and use forums such as this one to come back on and ask a question. Okay, I know what I'm entitled to. He's not listening to me. He's not going to mediation. What's the next step? then I would say, right, you need to make a financial application, fill out the Form A, download it, send it into the court. Do you see what I mean? Because then you know what, where it is you're trying to get to, and your questions will then be, how do I get there? But at the moment, we don't know what you're entitled to.
Sure. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that then. Thank you ever so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kezzy. Bye. Hey, Captain.
Hello. Couple of points that I'm getting a lot of questions on tonight.
Yeah.
Step parents getting PR.
Yes.
Could you talk about how you would go about that and how easy it is to get the step parents get PR, especially when they're married?
Absolutely. So relatively straightforward when you are a step parent. So the first thing to do is check with the other biological parent, not the one that you're married to, the other one, to see if they're in agreement. Because if they are in agreement, then you download a parental responsibility agreement form. All three of you complete it and you send it into court. Okay, so you have then parental, the step parent has parental responsibility. Usually where we get involved is when the other biological parent who's not married to the step parent says, no, I don't want that person having parental responsibility of my children. So then we have to make an application to the court. Now what the court's looking at, as ever, is what's in the best interest of the child. So let's say the step parent is living with the child all the time. Chances are they're going to get parental responsibility because there's a high risk that the child, if suffering an accident or needs emergency attention, is going to be with that step parent because they're living with the child. So they're with that child a lot of the time. If, however, the step-parent is only having alternate weekends with the child because they're married to the parent who only has the contact order, they may struggle slightly. You'll have to do more of a persuasion job with the court to say, look, you know, it really is in the child's best interest that I have PR. And there can be many ways to do that, but that would be how I'd answer that question.
Yeah. On what Legal Eagle's posted in the pinned at the top of chat about Both Parents Matter is a fantastic charity.
Absolutely. So both
Mark likes to get that mentioned as much as possible.
Yeah, he does. So Both Parents Matter is a charity, it's an organisation set up to help fathers who struggle to see their children. We have an overwhelming number of fathers in this country under England and Wales jurisdiction that cannot get to see their children, not because they are a risk to the children, but because the mothers simply don't deem it necessary or appropriate. So Both Parents Matter is an absolute fantastic organisation that help dads, even if it's emotional help. They will help legally as best as they can. They're not legally trained and they don't hold themselves out as legal experts. But, you know, that they will help. So thank you for posting that, Legal Eagle. Any fathers out there who are struggling, by all means, check them out. Both Parents Matter.
Great. Another question I've had, Tracy, is my solicitor's asked me for a £10,000 retainer. I'm not quite sure what that means.
So that solicitor is looking for £10,000 on account. They want that held in the client account of their law firm before they will do any work on your file. So they are, you know, they've given you a cost estimate of how much it's going to cost. And some firms like big lump sums like that on the account first. Other firms will maybe want £300 on account. And they'll do the work, and then when the £300 has been spent because of the legal costs, then they'll ask you for another £300 or £500 or £1,000. So a £10,000 retainer, you've got to hand over the £10,000 or the solicitor's not willing to take on your case.
Okay, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, yeah. That would be a big matter, the fact that they're asking for such a large retainer. If it's a family law matter, I'm assuming that it is, that's a huge matter. In commercial transactions, that wouldn't be seen as very big. But in family or crime, yeah, that's a pretty big, old, serious case.
I did think that because I asked if it was in family law and I was like, wow, that's a massive retainer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I've got for now, Trace.
Thanks, Captain. Just saw a little clip it there on TikTok. Karen's put, Tracy doesn't respond to DMs, only emails. Yeah, Karen's quite right. It's not that I won't respond to them. I just get so many. I will always go in and look at them. And occasionally I'll say, look, send me an email. The other reason as well is that it's really hard to get enough information from the DM. You know, people abbreviate, they don't tell me enough information. So it's very difficult. Whereas in an email, we can have a little bit of a back and forth. There's lots of ways to contact me on email. You can get my email address is just tracy@maloneyfamilylaw.com. It's going to be in my bio. I also have socials@maloneyfamilylaw.com. So yeah, lots of ways to send me an email. And I get that some people just want to send a message. That's fine. It's just I get so many messages, you may not get an answer. How long does a child court order last, please? It lasts usually until the child is 16, unless there is a specific direction in the order. But if the order doesn't say anything about how long it lasts, then it's going to continue until the child's 16. Once the child reaches 16, it's very difficult to then get another court order after that. They tend to organically fall away, okay? My husband used me to get a British passport and has now sent me divorce papers that I've signed. Okay, well, he will be able to get a divorce in this country if one of you are habitually resident here or domiciled here. So, you know, if he wishes to start the divorce proceedings, he can. If your question is, or your concern is, that you've been duped, that wouldn't be a family law matter that I could assist you with. What's the cost of a financial order if no property is involved? Donna, that's a great question. Difficult one to answer. So if you're looking at a clean break order and there are no assets involved at all, you are looking at hundreds rather than thousands, okay? So where there's nothing to be divided and you're just looking to sever the financial ties and you're both in agreement, generally it's hundreds of pounds rather than thousands. However, if there's things that need to go into the order, or maybe we're not in agreement, sometimes it can be as much as £700, £800, £900. If there's negotiation involved, it might just creep over into the £1,000, depending on how much time we're spending. If obviously we go to court, it can be anywhere upwards of sort of £5,000 up to, you know, £20,000 perhaps. It really does depend. The key to keeping your costs down is to agree as much as you can with your ex, and I know that can be difficult. Agree with them, let the solicitor know. Because if you say to the solicitor, we're in agreement as to what's going into the order, we'll sign whatever it is that you send us out to sign, then generally we can give a fixed fee, okay? A fixed fee, and there's only one fee that applies because we only need one order, okay? Captain, you're back with another question.
I've got a couple for you, Trace.
Okay.
My husband was a lodger in my house that I owned, and everything was in my name. We moved into another property that I bought a year before we got married, and he is now claiming cohabitation started when he was my lodger. We were married for 4 years, and he is claiming cohabitation as a lodger. He has not engaged, and he's claiming he deserves a two-bed house. I've been paying off all the loans and mortgages, and I've been made the main contributor. I have my FDA, and this is the big issue that needs resolving. I've been quoted 30,000 legal fees and seems so expensive. How will the judge see this at an FDA, and can we resolve when cohabitation started?
So cohabitation implies that you are in an intimate relationship, that you are living together as a couple. If they first met because he was her lodger, you cannot count that as cohabitation, okay? And the reason for that is that so many people have lodgers. Well, that would mean that all the lodgers around the country are then entitled to a share of that person's house. So it's for him to prove, really, you know, if she's able to make a statement to the court to say it was at this point that we had an intimate relationship and were living together, it's at this point that the court needs to consider the period of our relationship started. It's for him to disprove that, for him to say, no, it started before that. I mean, does she have evidence? Does she have him paying her money as being a lodger? Is there any emails that went between them? Anything at all like that? But no, if she's saying that he was a lodger, then, you know, the courts, chances are the court's going to believe her. And sorry, there was another question there about 30,000, that it's too expensive. I don't... yeah, what was that?
So, I've been paying... I have my FDA,
yeah,
and this is a big issue that needs resolving. She's been quoted £30,000 in legal fees and seems so excessive considering I had no house and only paid £500 a month.
Right.
I don't understand that myself.
It's hard for me to tell you if a solicitor is overcharging. I don't know what's involved in the matter and I don't know the hourly rate. £30,000 seems a lot of money, but if you're employing a solicitor that charges, you know, £500 an hour, that's limits the hours that they can do. Do you know what I mean? So I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
No. I've got a question from Dee, who's in the audience.
Yeah.
She has a FDA hearing coming up in a week's time as litigant in person. I know you're all for litigants in person. Yeah. And my ex has not been compliant at all. Just not sure what to expect. And will I be allowed to tell my side of the story? Will I be allowed to ask any questions or make comments, suggestions? Also, what happens if a person becomes emotional during the hearing? Is it seen as a negative behaviour in the judge's eyes?
Just remind me, Captain, is this finance or children?
Finance. FDA.
Okay. So we aren't storytelling when we get to court, particularly with finances. Somebody has made the application. The court wants to make the order as asked for in the application. So I don't know, has she made the application or is she the respondent? Did she say?
She didn't say, no.
Okay, that's fine.
She said she's litigant in person.
Okay, which is absolutely fine, but don't tell a story, all right? Imagine, like, just remember that the judge is hearing the same story, really, over and over again. So if you're the one that's made the application, you're going to be saying to the judge, this is what I'm asking the court for. This is why I think I'm entitled to it. We haven't reached an agreement. This is what I think would help us reach an agreement. And that might be up-to-date pension valuations, a valuation of the property. I need the questions answering that I sent him once I received his for me. He hasn't provided me with full financial disclosure, okay? If you're the respondent, you are going to say to the judge, the reason why I'm not in agreement with the application is this, this, and this. But this is what I think will help us resolve the issue. I need her to give me more bank statements. I need her to show me where all that money's been spent. Do you know what I mean? So, and we call that directions. So don't tell a story. Go in with your position. Know what it is that you want the court to do and how you think the directions are going to help your case. What is it that you need? Because the court's not going to give you an order at the first appointment. It's going to give you homework, which is directions, okay?
Okay. That's all I've got for now, Trace.
Fab. Thank you. Jamie, you have your hand up whenever you are ready. I've sent you an invitation. Come onto the stage and ask me a question. While I'm waiting for Jamie, the audience is starting to fill up. We now have 20 in the audience. But can I just let everybody know, if you've been struggling with Discord, there's been some changes behind the scenes, not by me, but by Discord in general. And what you may have to do is completely get rid of the app, delete it from whatever you know, if it's on your laptop or your phone or whatever, and reinstall it. The last couple of weeks have been a little bit quiet on Discord, and it's for that reason. And I think because I keep letting people know of that, we're getting more and more people return back to the Discord again. Jamie, not sure what's happening. I have sent you an invitation, but I'll go on to TikTok and answer a couple of questions there. Can my grandson's ex change his boy's name now my grandson has passed away? Anne Jameson, thank you for that question. If your grandson had parental responsibility and he's now died, and therefore there's nobody else with parental responsibility save for the parent that's changed the name, then yes, she can. Jamie, hopefully I can hear you.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can. What's your question?
Perfect. What it is me and my wife was recently split up, but yeah. I've got obviously stepchildren with her.
Yeah.
Now, we was told by a social worker that we had to get written permission off of her first ex-husband for me to be able to still have contact with the children, and we were just wondering if that was true.
Written permission from her husband, did you say?
Yeah, from her first husband.
No.
With the...
No. So your partner has parental responsibility, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So when the children are in her care, unless there's a court order preventing this, but when the children are in her care, she can make the decision as to who the children spend time with. Now, if father objects to that, he can then raise his concerns with the court. But if there's no court order barring your partner from making those decisions, she can exercise her PR. She doesn't need father's permission.
Okay, that's perfect, because obviously she hasn't allowed me to see the children under the worry that he's going to do something or report her to the social because of this.
No, I mean... You know, I don't know the background, Jamie, or the circumstances, but common sense will apply. If he reports it to social services, they're going to want to know, are these children at risk? You know, only you and your partner know that. And if they're not at risk and there's nothing to be concerned about, then you're OK. Obviously, if they are, or, you know, somebody has a history or, you know, criminal convictions that might be brought up, then, you know, that's going to all come out in the wash. But if nothing like that's taken place, I don't see there'd be an issue.
Okay, that's perfect. Can I ask you another question as well?
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm going to say partner. She's my ex-wife now, but I'll say partner. It's easier, it makes it less confusing.
Yeah.
Her ex-husband is taking her to court for a child arrangements order.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we had the initial statement come through the post from the application to the court, which he's lied on quite a few facts that he's put in there. Is there anything that we can do to that, or do we have to wait for the full statement to come through for her to be able to do the reply?
So how you reply to allegations that you say aren't true is by responding using a statement. So if she already has permission to file a statement, then she's going to address all of those allegations in that statement. And if she hasn't got permission, then that's a direction that she wants to ask the judge for. So judge, there are things being said in the application that aren't accurate. Don't use the word lie, but they're not accurate. I would like the court to see the more accurate picture. Could I have permission, please, to file a statement outlining those inaccuracies? Something along those lines.
Okay, and can she just write that to the court, can she, to be able to do that?
No, so at the next court hearing, she will have to ask permission to file a statement so that she can address the inaccuracies. Generally, the court will order statements anyway. But no, she has to wait until she goes back to court to ask for that permission, yeah.
Because he hasn't actually even got to court yet. It was just his initial statement for the child arrangements order to be put into court.
Yeah, so when you get when she gets to court for that first appointment, she's going to ask the court then.
Right, OK.
All right.
Perfect, thank you very much.
OK, thanks. Bye, Jamie.
Bye.
For those of you listening on the podcast, I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. And don't forget, guys, if you can give a 5-star review, if you think that it's worthy of one, that would really help us increase our monthly listeners and therefore help more and more people. Thanks again.